Blog Talk Radio.
Wiping my eyes.
This is Joseph.
Man, Mama, you know what? Hey, Robert. Joseph. Well, Joseph was here, man. We just left Mom over there, man. Mama's, we were just talking about this. Mama, like, she got about 100 more years in her, man.
Man, Mama gonna outlive us all. What are you talking about?
That's what we were discussing. That's what we were not worried about, but concerned. You're like, man, what if she leave all? What if all of us leave her here? Who's gonna take care of Mama?
Well, she probably look. Hey, you may not be concerned, but she might be a little concerned.
Yeah, she look a little scary in the eyes.
So if y'all see Mom out there cooking up some healthy food and putting the treadmill in the house, she has some self-interest.
Little something to think about, man. Got a lot to talk about. We're going to, like I said, I'm Leon Gatewood. We got Joseph Gatewood and Robert Gatewood on the line. Let's see if the Minister Curtis didn't make it in yet. That's cool. You know how that is. So we're going to start talking a little bit. But one of a couple of current events first before we bring Pamela Ann in. Robert, Pamela Ann, I know you're on the line with us. So, hey, you can chime in on this too, but we know your story.
Okay.
We're going to get into your subject in a little bit. We're getting into some stuff you want to talk about. Please feel free. You hear?
I do. I'm with
hey,
you.
Hey, Leon, I got a feeling Pam's going to jump in there. If the mood hits her, I think Pam's going to jump up in there. I really do.
Oh, yeah, man. You must have been
Pam got some grit.
You must have been taking in on Pam, man.
I hear some grit in Pam's voice. Pam don't be taking no stuff. I just feel it.
Oh,
that's what I'm just saying. I'm just saying.
Arched my back, put my hand up under my chin, and I'm just waiting to see what you're about to say.
Ooh, check it out. Go on, Pam.
Yeah. Let's talk about Bill Cosby right quick, man. I don't have much to say about that.
Lord, have mercy. Oh, boy.
I don't have much to say about that.
Well,
so I'm gonna let y'all talk. I don't have much to say about that, so I'm gonna let you guys talk.
Well,
what do you think about Bill, man? What do you think about Bill?
Who, me? What do I think about it?
Yes, sir.
Oh, well, see, well, if he did what he said they did, it was not a good thing. However, there are a lot of people out here in high positions that have done the same things or worse, and they are still going about business as usual.
Good talk about Trump.
Good example of that would be our president and our Supreme Court nominee.
Well,
with those, because basically what they were accusing him of giving those ladies were quaaludes, and of course a nickname for those were Black Beauties, as that was the nickname for them. But you have to understand the culture he was in during that time. Now, those things were very popular at that time. And a lot of women knew what they were doing when they took those things.
Okay, and like I was saying, for me to chime in.
Let me finish.
I'm
going to
let you finish.
There are a lot of women. They knew what they were doing because Bill Cosby, he's older than I am, but he ain't a whole lot older than I am. And I came up a little bit on the tail end of that era, well, you know, in the middle of it. And I've actually had women ask me for those things. And, of course, I never had them. Didn't have them then, don't have them now. But I understand that was a culture that was going on at that time where they used that. That was just a part of dating. But go ahead and chime in, Miss Pam.
First and foremost, Pam.
Yes.
Before you chime in, because I want to hear you. I want to hear your full glory. But I just got to add a little bit before you come in. Is that okay?
That's fine.
I'm going to say this, that I think Bill got away with almost bloody murder for 50 years, and it caught up with him. I believe that some of the women that took the quaaludes probably took it knowingly, but there were some as young as 17, 18, 19 years old who had no idea that they were being drugged and they were being taken advantage of without their knowledge. I think that Bill Cosby is not a good example of who we should hold up as a example for Black manhood. And I think that it's true that Kavanaugh, Trump, and others, they should be held to the same standard, and they should be thrown under the jailhouse along with Bill Cosby. I think all of them, anybody who abuses women, whether it's Cosby, Trump, Kavanaugh, Roger Ailes, Mac Lauer, or whomever, they should all be held accountable.
Let me say one more thing before Pamela kick in. Now, I don't want my comments to be construed as I'm a supporter of Bill Cosby. I've never liked Bill Cosby. I never liked Bill Cosby. I didn't like Fat Albert. Still don't like him. But
you like Fat Albert?
No, I didn't like Fat Albert. I didn't like
Big Good Yellow Man.
But anyway, but the bottom line is this. He got caught up in a culture. He got caught up in a culture. It was not a good culture. And for him abusing women, I mean, of course, I would be the first to say that any man that abuses a woman, he deserves whatever he has coming to him. But having said that, a lot of these women, maybe not all of them, but a lot of them were willing participants. I'm done with it.
Pamela, get us straight. Jump in here.
So far, you're my favorite Gatewood tonight. You're my favorite Gatewood tonight. Them other two? But we all came up in a certain culture. And right now, we're in a culture where our young people, too, are dealing with the peer pressure of different kinds of drugs. And for me, it was just weed. I've spent plenty of nights, and I'm just transparent and I'm honest. So y'all, if y'all ain't never been on my Facebook page, Leon, tell them about me. So I'm going to be transparent. But I've spent plenty of nights.
That's why you're here tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you.
But I have spent plenty of nights with different guys. smoke weed with them, drink with them. That was our culture. But the bottom line is this. When I said no, no meant no. It wasn't, some of those women said, you know what, I woke up and this man's penis was in my mouth.
Oh, I have mercy.
Oh, yeah, well, I ain't heard that testimony.
go back and read the deposition.
Joseph,
yes.
Joseph, I spent a day ago, I went and read 60 testimonies.
Mm-hmm.
And I, that was, by the time I think it should be required reading for anybody in who comments on the Bill Cosby, because there's some of the things this guy did. You can't, it's heinous. It's unimaginable. And when I read about that, about six or seven of them were African-American women, some as young as 17. I think one was even 15 years old. They didn't know they were being drugged. They didn't take the Quaaludes consensually. It was slipped in their drink without their knowledge. And that was a pattern that was repeated time and time again. These women weren't superstars. They didn't have axes to grind. They weren't paid by the man. These were regular people trying to get a job in Hollywood.
Some we were sent
there by their parents, because Bill Cosby had the perfect storm going. He said, look, because I'm America's dad, you're going to put down your defenses. You're going to send your daughters to me. You're going to not watch me like you would watch some bad creep in the alley. So he used that with precision to gain people's trust, to get them in his bungalow, whether it was in Pennsylvania or up in wherever his house is right now. And once their back was turned, he would drop that drug and that drink, and they wake up, some cases 2 days later. His penis is in their mouth. They've got semen on their chest. Their clothes are disheveled. This was a pattern. And if half of it was true, if a third of it was true, if one-fifth of it was true, this guy needs to be under the jailhouse.
I would go as far as to say, because there's a big little word you use in there was if, but from my perspective, if it was true in one particular incident, he's guilty. But I don't know that.
Excuse me, sir, but he has been found guilty. So we always say you're guilty until proven guilty. He's been proven guilty. Therefore, he's guilty, and he is exactly where he needs to be. Now, we just need to work on getting Kavanaugh there, getting Trump there, but we're not going to excuse Bill Cosby because he was black and we're waiting on them to arrest him.
I don't like Bill Cosby. Don't get me wrong.
I know. I'm talking to the people that's listening, because a lot of people are saying what I'm hearing is, well, none of the white men are being arrested. So what are we supposed to do? Are we supposed to not arrest black racists until they start arresting white ones and just leave them out there to continue to rape? No. We got to start somewhere. And we started with Bill Cosby.
Well, the thing about it is, too, but I understand exactly what you all say. I mean, I feel what you're saying. But if justice was colorblind, I would say okay. And at the same time, you know, you got these women out here. A lot of them he paid. They looking for position. A lot of them, in my opinion, well, I'm not even gonna give you my opinion. But a lot of these women were not as noble as a lot of people put them up to be.
And they may not have been, but because we have created a culture, like you said, but because we created a culture of rape, women have to do those things. Sorry to tell you, we shouldn't have to, but sometimes we do. We have to make sure that our skirts are sometimes shorter than what we really want it to be, and we should not have to do those things.
No, That's why I disagree. That's why I'm saying a woman should maintain her dignity at all time, and she shouldn't sell herself out for a position or money. Anyway.
And what should the man do?
I say the man should do the same thing. But I'm just saying a woman should not do that, period.
But I've heard you twice say these women, but I didn't hear you say anything about these men that are causing these women to do these things.
How does a man cause a woman to do anything? How does a man cause a woman to do that? How does a man cause a woman to do anything?
He dropped Quaaludes in her drink.
Well, what I'm saying now, in that particular case, what you're saying, but what you just said was, a lot
because
of times women
got
to dress a certain way in order to get to a certain position.
You're trying to feed your kids? Come on. If you got 4 or 5 kids at home and you're trying to feed your kids, and for some women, it ain't going to happen.
Well, you don't go back and sue the man later on. You go out and sell it and then go back and sue him.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying.
They did not sue him. Not all of the victims sued him.
You got to go ahead and sell him and give it to him for a position and come back and sue him.
Let me jump in one more time. I would say there is no circumstance where it is okay for a man to take advantage of a woman. She could wear a short dress, she could be drunk, she could be on drugs, but that still does not excuse somebody to rape you.
What I'm just saying in the context of what she said. She said a lot of times women gotta dress a certain way in order to get an interview, a position, or whatever. I'm not saying that's a green light to take advantage of a woman. What I'm saying, but a woman should maintain her dignity and be the way she is at all times, and shouldn't let down her dignity for a position or an interview. That's what I'm saying.
And you got men shouldn't put us in a position to where we should have to.
Men
and
can't
nobody,
put a woman in a position to do nothing.
Yes, you can.
Well, I didn't know that.
Most of the men that rape, most of the men that commit domestic violence, these are men of power. More men of power commit these crimes than anybody else. Yes, you guys do put us in those positions to do that.
I don't know. You listen to straight talk on domestic violence at the Gatewood, brothers. Ladies and gentlemen, you listen to straight talk on domestic violence at the Gatewood, brothers. We're going to be discussing domestic violence. Did you know that domestic violence is a major public health issue for women, in particular African-American women? And this thing they call intimate partner violence is pushing this health issue straight to the top of the list of challenges in our community. Did you know that? You know, some people even blaming that on institutional racism. Did you know that?
What?
Anyway, we're having this discussion tonight because we want the community to understand the impact of domestic violence and that it is having on our community, and we want to seek out effective ways to address it. And like most issues, ladies and gentlemen, we have to look really hard and deep at ourselves to get the answers. Straight talk with Gatewood Brothers.
Wow.
Next up.
Wow.
Can I get an Abe?
What you got, Robert? Wait a minute, Rob. We got Curtis Gatewood on the line. How you doing tonight, Curtis Gatewood?
Rob Colley.
how you guys doing? Hello, everybody.
We're doing great, man. We're having straight talk
tonight.
God be
glory. Yeah, man.
Yes,
like y'all have some hot stuff going on there.
Yes, sir. We got it going on.
Talking straight.
We got Sabrina Huff on the line. How you doing tonight, Ms. Huff?
Yo, hold on, man. I got to get my grandbaby here in order. Hold on.
Hey, grandbaby.
Hold up, baby.
Yeah, man, get your grandbaby.
Y'all go ahead. I'll come.
Anybody
hey,
else
man,
that got any comments on anybody
Can
else
I,
got a comments on these topics?
I want to make a quick comment, guys. Hey, Pamela Ann. Hello.
Hey.
Hey.
And I just wanted to say, even in listening, I actually had a real quick flashback that I pulled myself back away from it real quick.
Hold up, babe.
Because I grew up in a domestic violence household. Mm-hmm. And I remember being 16 and my mom was in the hospital in Washington, D.C., just finding out that she had cervical cancer. And her boyfriend that we were living with, I remember waking up at about, I guess it was about 7, 8 o'clock in the morning. I remember waking up. Now, my mom's in the hospital, and he's laying on the bed that I'm sleeping in. And his question to me was, can I come closer? And I remember jumping up and screaming. And I will tell you, I was 16 years old.
Wow.
So domestic violence goes so much further than just hitting and
absolutely
taking advantage of someone, because not only does it affect the woman that may be in it, because I remember times when my mom and this man fought one another in the household. But now she's in the hospital fighting for her life, and he's trying to figure out how he can take advantage of her 16-year-old daughter, who just happened at the time to have a five-month-old son laying right there in the bed with me.
Oh, that makes sense.
Wow. So it is some very sick people in the world, and I'm thankful that this conversation is taking place tonight.
Absolutely. Thank you, Ms. Huff. Thank you for joining us tonight. Thank you so
I think
much
somebody said. I think somebody said earlier that, and it is proven that all domestic violence is not necessarily physical. There's a power dynamic that is inherent, basically in society, where men have used their position of power, their physical power, their financial power, to use that and hold sway over people, to bend people to their will, and so. I think sometimes that it's underreported and it's marginalized that there is quite a bit of violence that takes place that's not physical. Matter of fact, one of my clients, a client of mine up in the D.C. area, she's Mildred Muhammad. She's the former wife of the D.C. sniper, the guy that terrorized this city back in 2012, I think, for about 10 days. This guy was shooting people at will. And the reason he shot her, the reason he was shooting these people was to disguise the fact that he was coming to shoot her, kill her, and take the kids in a custody battle. And
okay, Robert. Where is
she
he
has
now?
Become an advocate for domestic violence. And so I'm very, very familiar with this whole discussion, and just by reading in period, and by having her as a client, and I did the cover for her book, and so I'm very familiar with this topic, and every time it comes up, I have to hearken back on some of the things that she went through, and just by reading the paper every day and seeing some of the stories, people are shooting people are raping people are abusing people, but also there's a quiet undercurrent of people who have not been physically abused but are still facing a daily terror.
Robert, is the sniper still alive?
Excuse me?
Is the sniper still alive?
He was executed. He was actually executed. He gave me death penalty.
I was going to say, you better not be too close.
Start speaking. You can speak freely.
Hey, Roger, the one thing. I was listening to you, and the one thing that you said for me that resonated is the fact that it stays with you. That's why I started what I said a minute ago with the fact that you can have a flashback just from hearing.
Right.
And that in itself can take you back into that situation. I remember being in the fourth, fifth, and sixth grade and my mom and this man fighting. I remember him holding a gun to my mom growing up. You don't forget that. I'm 50 years old, and I don't forget that. And it does not change the pain of what happened.
And Sabrina, if you were actually enlisted in the military or had been in the military, they have a name for that. It's called PTSD.
Exactly.
And we don't want to call it that when it comes to domestic violence, because we look at domestic violence as just being, we look at it so nonchalantly that, it's not my business, I don't care what's going on, because we've become so dehumanized that we don't even realize that the effects of DV. I mean, even the CDC says that domestic violence is such a public health issue that so many people suffer from hypertension, high blood pressure, PTSD. I went through the same thing myself, Sabrina. Some of the impact of DV is so profuse and so profound that we haven't even found the words to describe it yet. That's why we have to have these conversations, and that's why we have to keep talking about it. Imagine a child sitting in a home watching their mom being beaten and what it does to them. Not only do this kid have to now go to school, figure out how they're going to make good grades, figure out how to grow up and be a productive member of society, while all the time having all of these flashbacks pop up. I had them for over 30 years. 30 years I had to deal with that. because I was dealing with what I saw going on in my home. It is horrendous. It is absolutely horrendous. What is domestic violence? Let's start right there, because you guys have hit the nail on the head. No, it's not just physical, because for so long we were taught that if you don't see a black eye, if you don't see scratches, if you don't see scars and bruises, then it really didn't happen. Even when the police officers back in the day would come out, they would look for scars and black eyes, and if you didn't have any, then, you know, they would just brush it off. But domestic violence is so much more than just the physical. What about sexual abuse? How do you show somebody that you've been sexually abused? Unless you go to the hospital, get a rape kit, and they do their little kit and show that there's some tearing, there's scarring down there. But how do I show a police officer that I've been sexually abused, which is also covered under the umbrella of domestic violence? How do you show emotional abuse? How do I stand here and just say to this police officer, every day I come home, he doesn't even have to say anything. I dealt with a woman who was abused on her honeymoon night. And every night after that, when she would get off work and go home, her husband wouldn't say anything to her. Do you know what he would do?
Mm.
He would simply sit there and crack his knuckles.
Mm.
And that alone put so much fear in this woman, that she knew that whatever she was doing, whatever she was saying, she had to line up to whatever he wanted just by him cracking his knuckle. How do you explain that to people? How do you explain any of this to people who are looking you in your face saying, well, why don't you just leave? Why don't you just get out? You don't understand the fear that these people are dealing with that are in these situations. Power and control is a terrible thing. We see it in the White House
right
now. Look
Amen.
At this fool up here. He wants power over everything. He wants to control everything. Now, imagine Melania or somebody having to go home to fools like that every single day. Economic abuse. Some of these people don't even know how to use ATM cards. Financial abuse. All of that is covered under the umbrella of domestic violence. How do you explain psychological abuse to people who look at you and you wear a smile every day and they think everything is okay? Well, you can't be that psychologically abused, because you come in here and you laugh and you joke, and they don't know that by the time you leave work and get in your car, you are sweating profusely because you're so scared to go home. Now we got cyber stalking. We got stalking, period. We got threats. We got teen dating violence. All of this is covered under the umbrella of domestic violence. What are we saying to our teenagers? I have parents that I talk to right now who allow their daughters and even their sons to be abused by, we're talking about teens here. They're being abused now at a rate higher than anything else we've ever seen. So come February, we're going to be talking about teen dating violence, because that's the month for that. But our teens now, I'm going to the schools all the time, and every time, and it never fails, Gatewood Brothers, it never fails that every time before I even leave the school, I have at least five girls, one boy maybe, slipping me their numbers, slipping me a note to say, you know what, my boyfriend hits me. But we still don't want to talk about this stuff. We still don't want to deal with it. We still want to pretend that it's not happening. We go to church every Sunday, and so more people in the church are being abused than anywhere else, any demographic that there is. I get first ladies calling me saying that my husband beat me every Saturday night, and then we have to get up on Sunday and we have to go to church and play this happily married. Come on. We got to have this conversation, because it's so freaking deep.
I'm going to slip you a note. Hold up.
What, Pam?
Come to take a quick deep breath, Robert. Let's take a quick break, and we'll come back. We'll reset a little bit, and we'll find out who this young lady is we're talking to. You know what? I don't think we're ready to formally introduce you, Pamela.
It's okay. I don't need an introduction.
Yeah, you do. We need to talk. We need to hear. We'll be back in just a few seconds. It was about 60.
Heartache and enough. Don't know how much more I can pay. See, I decided
Gatewood Brothers, and our featured speaker, featured guest tonight is Pamela Ann. Our featured guest tonight, I'm going to say that again, is Pamela Ann. Pamela Ann, I'd like to welcome you again to the Straight Talk on Domestic Violence
Pamela
show
Ann.
With the Gatewood Brothers.
Hey, Pamela,
welcome
hey,
to the show.
Hello.
You are something
Pamela
else.
Oh, good. Good.
This is Curtis Gatewood talking to you now. Coming in, Curtis, introduce yourself.
Let me just say something. Hey, Pamela, how you doing?
Hey, I'm well. Yeah.
I never had the opportunity to talk directly to you. I think we just kind of like do our Facebook posts for justice, and so we appreciate all you do. I never got
Thank
a
you.
Formal introduction, but I do know you're busy. And I do know you are very socially conscious, and we appreciate all you do, dear sister. So glad
Thank
to be on
you.
The show with you.
Likewise.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, Pamela, at this time we're going to allow you to let's reset a minute, reboot, reset, whatever you want to call it. Let's just kind of, I'm going to start with kind of, let's introduce everybody. Who are you?
I am Pamela Ann. I'm actually Pamela Morrow, born, raised, and bred in Anson County, straight out of Peachland, North Carolina. Yay! I'm just Pam. I'm from Peachland.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Don't do that.
You know any Shans down there in Peachland? Shan?
To my Mary Shan, am.
Yeah. No.
How about some Pokes? I know you know some Pokes.
There you go.
Burns. You're talking about Burns, man.
You're Perineum. You relate to Perineum.
Yes.
Yep,
Perineum. Perry's my cousin. My mother's maiden name is Burns.
Cynthia Neal.
Yep. They're my second cousin. Them and my mom was first cousins.
Hey, y'all got a lot of peaches. Y'all got a lot of peaches down there. A lot of peaches.
See,
how they calling
you
that?
See,
you being abusive, man. That's abusive.
He's playing.
Hey, I ain't had dinner, man. Shoot, you talking about peaches? That's
we have is this a national show? Bro.
I'm saying peach cobbler.
Yeah,
we're
in Africa and everywhere.
This is a national show.
We are international.
Okay, man. Y'all go ahead and explain what y'all are talking about. Peachland. In Elsinville, in Lyonville, in Deep Creek. I mean, people across the world don't know what y'all are talking about.
So, hey,
it's got a different name, brother.
There is a Peachland and Deep Creek everywhere in the world. So we'll just swap the names.
Okay. All right.
I think Kunta Kinte from Deep Creek.
Interesting.
Check this out.
We're
going to get back to you.
Anson County,
we're
going
to get back
Carolina.
To Pamela Ann, Pamela Marblunt. That's how I know you.
All right.
Yeah,
but
we want to talk to you, kind of get your story, so that we'll know, understand. See, here's what I want to do. We want to understand. You have so much passion We want to understand where that passion comes from.
Absolutely.
Yes, yes.
So the reason why I do what I do is because in 1982, right there in Peachland, my mother was stabbed to death by her boyfriend.
Oh.
Oh, wow. That would bring passion.
Sorry to hear that. So sorry to hear that.
Thank you. So not only was she stabbed to death, but she was stabbed to death in a bed where my two sisters and I slept with her in.
Ooh.
So when Sabrina was talking about some of the things she experienced in her home, I lived those things as well. And that was the end result of everything that I saw. So the reason why I'm passionate is because I want people to get a clear understanding that he didn't just show up one night and kill my mother.
Right.
This was going on for years and years and years. I was only, guess how old I was? I was 8 years old when that happened. My baby sister, which was the youngest of us all, was six. My youngest sister, six. My older sister was nine, and my brother was 10. So now at 8 years old, I am faced with living the rest of my life without my mother because somebody felt like they had the power and the control to take her life. So I'm passionate about it. Why am I passionate about it? Because I refuse to allow another kid to sit in a house and watch their mother die because I know exactly how that feels.
Lord,
so I have to do everything that I can. So I decided, I said, what can I do to honor my mother? How can I honor her? And the only thing that I could come up with was to honor her by was to keep saying her name. And in order for me to keep saying her name, that meant I had to keep talking. Yeah, I'd go out and tell her stories. A lot of people in our family felt like I shouldn't tell her story. You know, that's why we were in bond. That's why we're in bondage so much when it comes to issues like this. Because, you know, we don't want to admit, even to this day, a lot of people don't want to admit that, you know what, Big Mama got it wrong. When she said to us what happens in this house stays in this house, she was wrong. She was wrong, and we were in bondage to that thing. So people right now don't even want to talk about what they're dealing with, and they're dealing with a killer. Domestic violence is a silent killer because the quieter you are, the more it happens. So I just decided in order for me to honor my mother, her name was Rebecca Burns Morrow, that I have
Rebecca
to keep
Rebecca Burns Morrow.
And that's
so
why
what year
I
did she graduate from high school?
She actually didn't graduate. She started having babies early, as you can see. So she didn't graduate. But, Leon, I will tell you this, that she was in the same class with Marie.
Okay. Gotcha.
So
gotcha.
Marie and Bobby Little, and they were all in the same class together. So they knew my mom. And I met those ladies. And so if you ever look on my Facebook post and whenever I'm talking to them, I always call them Ma because – I kind of stumbled up on them because I don't even have pictures of my mom. The only picture that I have of my mother, and you guys probably seen it on Facebook a couple of times, is a picture of her in her casket. And somebody cut out a picture of her in a yearbook. But when I look at the yearbook picture, I don't even know who I'm looking at because that's not the person that I knew, if that makes sense. But when I look at my mother in the casket, I know exactly who that is. And those are the only two pictures that I have of my mom. And so I would always pray and be like, God, you know, I just want to talk to some people who knew her. And it just so happened that a lady that knew me knew Marie, and she said, Pam, there's somebody I want you to meet. And it was Marie. And when she started talking to me about my mom, it was like, oh, my gosh. I mean, we just stood there and cried. So that's why those ladies are, like, so important to me because they keep reminding me of her that when I forget, because sometimes it's like, you know, do my girls look like my mama? I don't have the option of going to look through a photo album to see if that's true because somebody felt like they had the right to take that from me.
I understand. And I'm so sorry about that.
What are some of those signs, Pamela?
Some of the signs, is that what you said?
That would lead us up to, you know, like you said, this death didn't happen overnight. I thought that was a powerful statement you made. So what are some of the signs that we see that we can say, hold a minute, we need to draw the line right here. He may not have killed yet, or, you know, it could be hitting, but it may not be hitting. What are some things that you think we need to know to see this monster being created?
There's so many things, and I actually posted about three posts today, this morning, of signs to look for. So if anybody want to go to my Facebook page, Pamela Ann, and look at that. That's there. But some of the things that I saw happening in our home, I remember her being pushed up against the wall. I remember seeing that happen. So I saw it when it started from just going to a push. No abuser immediately start out just beating his victim.
Right.
That don't happen. So people who are saying, well, why don't you just leave, they don't realize that there's an attachment that's been built there. So I saw my mom. I seen her being pushed through the wall. I saw her being slapped. Other signs, I remember him always saying to her, well, I know you're sleeping with da-da-da, or you've been seeing da-da-da-da-da. Always being accused of having an affair, blaming you for, well, you're the reason why, you know, I only hit you because you did da-da-da or you did something wrong. Criticism. What about isolation is a key thing, because one of the things that they do is they will try to get you away from your family, away from your friends. You know, they say stuff like, they don't love you as much as I do. As long as it's me and you, you my ride or die. As long as it's us, we okay. No, that's isolation. He's trying to get you away because he knows that he's not going to stop doing, he or she knows that they're not going to stop doing what they're doing. And if they can get you away where you can't get help, and I'm just going to share this story right here, because when I was 6 years old, we moved over, we were in Peachland, and we moved to a place that we called Across the Creek. And the reason why we called it Across the Creek was because the house that we lived in was so far out in the woods, and what separated our house from our neighbor's house was a creek. So this night in particular, my mom and her abuser got into a fight, and we were trying to, it was terrible. They got into a fight. He reached over into the corner, and he grabbed a broom, and he started beating my mom with the broom. Now, this is after the push. This is after the slap. This is after my mom's tooth had been knocked out, and my little sister had to crawl on the floor to pick it up for her. This is after all of that. This is how it builds up, because each time usually gets worse and worse. So he beat my mother with a broom that night. He beat her so bad, Gatewoods, that the broom broke in half. And when the broom broke, he became angry that the broom broke from him beating her with it, that he reached down and picked up the broom, the end that had broken off, and he began to stab her with it.
Now that's what you call a real fool there. Mention this, Pamela.
Say that again,
Pamela. Where is he now?
He's actually deceased now. He's deceased now. Believe it or not, after he killed my mom, he was only sentenced to 3 years. He only had to serve one.
I was gonna say thank God for penitentiary.
Where is he?
If he was in the penitentiary, I was gonna say thank God for penitentiaries. Yeah.
No, he's actually deceased now. He's deceased. I think he died about maybe 5 years ago, somewhere around that.
Okay, let's get to this. Let's get to this part. I heard you mention the guy that popping his knuckles and stuff, right? So what is your advice to somebody in a situation like that? How do you get out?
As an advocate, what we will do is, or what the ultimate goal is you want to come up with a safety plan. But you have to keep in mind that the safety plan will only work for those who want to get out. So for those who, and we are faced with that, and that is the sad reality of DV, is because sometimes I leave my bed in the middle of the night to go to the hospital with these victims, to meet these victims somewhere, to go to their house and try to help them. But by the time I leave them, they're like, you know what, I'm just going to stay. I've seen people who don't want to leave their multi-million-dollar homes because they don't have anywhere to go. And sometimes the only thing that we can do is we can listen. We can be there for them, and we can love them. And we don't want to be their abusers, so we don't want to go to them saying, you need to get out, telling them what they need to do. You know, you need to get out. You just need to leave. Come and go with me. No, we can't make them do anything, because at the end of the day, the decision is theirs. But when they make those decisions, when they get that wake-up call and they make those decisions that they're ready to leave, we want to be the people that sit down with them and say, hey, you know what? This is the worst time. So this is another stat. The worst time for any victim is when she's leaving or after she's left. Because right now he feels like I've lost my power and I've lost my control, and the only thing that they feel like that they can do to stop that from happening is to kill their victim. We're seeing it every day. Every day I'm posting a story.
That's right.
Yeah. How far are we from the day where you can go in and just get these guys and lock them up. I mean,
we
that's
are
crazy.
So far.
How far are we?
So far away from that.
Can I jump in here for 1 second? I think what Pamela Ann is doing is the discussion has to start because society is not prepared. I think until we change the mindset of some of the people that who are victim blaming, they're blaming the victim, saying you should have left. Why didn't you do this?
Absolutely.
Why didn't you do that? And she has to. What she's doing is exactly right. You have to be prepared for that day when you are ready to leave. You don't just like he didn't jump up one day and decide to become an abuser. You can't just jump up one day and leave. You have to take steps to prepare for that
Absolutely.
Eventual day. And so it's a process, but what she's saying is exactly right. You have to start with the discussion. We are living among some of these people, and we are giving them cover and shelter, some of these people who are doing the abusing, and we're not checking them. We have
Absolutely.
To check every time one of these discussions comes up. Somebody says, hey, I'm going home to beat my wife. You have to step up and say, look, man, that's not right. You shouldn't be doing that. I'm not going to engage in this discussion. People still do that.
Hey, Robert,
talk about that.
Can I chime in and add one thing to that?
Yes.
How many of you, and I know the answer, but for the listeners, I'd like to ask the Gatewood brothers, how many of you have daughters?
I got three.
Yeah, I have a daughter.
All of us.
Okay. Well, guess what?
Three.
That's where the discussion starts.
Every
father, every male that knows a female that has a daughter, that has a cousin, that has a sister, you need to start right there because that conversation, if it's not had, you will kick yourself later if you find out down the road that you were engaged in this conversation and didn't realize that it had already stepped into your house.
Well, Sabrina, you are so right because I have told my daughter about this power dynamic, and because if you're just waiting for him to hit you, like Pamela Ann said, that might happen after you've already gotten married.
Right.
It might even happen in year four or five. But those signs, they're laying those signs out early. If you can only just know what they are. And that's why it's important to have this discussion. Yes.
You know, and the amazing thing about it.
Excuse me? Sometimes they're really sweet. They're paying the bills, the lights
Absolutely.
Are on. You have
Absolutely.
A wonderful car. Everything about it is nice.
But that's
why we got to start having this conversation early. Yeah. And as I mentioned the teens earlier, not just when they're teenagers, but we got to start even earlier than that because I have a little boy who went to first grade and choked a classmate because she took something from him that he wanted to color with or something that happened in the class, right? This first grader choked this little girl, and when the teacher asked, why did you do that, he said, well, that's what my dad do to my mom when she doesn't listen.
Ooh.
We got to start way before they get 13. We got to start having these conversations because we see the signs. And we got to stop parents. We got to stop being those parents that, he bought my baby a cell phone. No, don't let him buy your daughter a cell phone because if he's calling her 120 times, that is stalking. It ain't cute. They ain't in love. It ain't puppy love. That is stalking. We've been teaching our girls, you know, if that little boy hits you, it means he likes you. No, it means he's primed growing up to possibly be an abuser. Start having those conversations with our children, not just our children. Any kid that comes in my house,
I'm sorry.
Who, me? Pamela. Brenda Richardson, question. I work in the school system. And I always watch children when they come in with abuse, maybe a knot on their head or something on it. And I try to ask questions. And from you, I would like to say, what question can I ask them? Because one day, a gentleman, a little boy came in, and he had scratches. And he lived with his mom. And he did open up and said that his father was abusing him and his mom. So I reported that to social service, which is in the school system. But is there anything else that I can, because some children that come in, they won't open up, they'll look at you and won't speak. Is something else I can kind of get them to open up to tell this, I do report when I see something, I go report that to the social worker. Okay, I see this on this child. But then that child can say, I felt something like that, but what I see is not, I say, oh, no, you felt there's something else done happened. Is there any other questions that I can approach them with to get them to open up?
Those are all good questions. There's no specific question to ask. You know, ask them whatever you're going to ask them in love, because right now that's what they're needing, because you have to keep in mind that these children have been conditioned and they've been prone to keep that secret.
And I would,
some of them, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
For some of them, like myself, we knew you don't go to school, and we would literally get put out of the house, have to sleep outside, or we would have to run out and go to school the next day with blood and stuff all on our clothes. And when somebody would ask what happened or what was wrong, you know, we would just pump our shoulders and say nothing. But sometimes you may have to go a little bit further than that. You have to learn, know these children, pay attention, know these children. If they're acting, are they acting out in school? That could be a sign of them being an abusive, or are they fighting? I went to school and fought every day. Every day I would go to school and fight. And I was just mimicking what I saw happening in the home. But nobody ever took the time to ask me, what was going on? Why are you doing this? I was a straight A student on my way to reformatory school, but nobody cared enough to say to me, something ain't right here. You can't be a straight A student come to school at my ear. Keep asking that kid that question. Keep showing them that love.
That's what I try to do with them, because when I do see them, because I do love children, I do like working with them, and when I see that, I try to befriend them and try to have them open up and say what's going on. One child did, he finally did open up and say, well, my dad did this. My dad took a cell phone and threw it at my father after he do this to my mom. And I did report that, and they did get counseling and I don't know what else, because, you know, it's secret. We can't go there. But I tried to do that. I tried to look for that kind, because my heart goes out to children that have been abused or that are getting abused, and that their parent usually, when if they are abusing the mom, they are abusing the children also.
And let me just say, we have about, it is estimated that there's about 8 million children in our country who deals with domestic violence in the home. So for just take that number right there, divided by the number of students, at least 1 in 4, look at your students, at least 1 in 4 women deal with domestic violence, 1 in 7 men. So just from looking at a classroom with at least 20 students, at least 5 of your students are dealing with domestic violence in the home. So those may, I'm not saying ignore the other students, but I'm just saying pay close attention to what's happening, if they're acting out of character, if they're starting to do things that they normally don't do, did the sweet kid now become the bully? Just pay close attention to those things and just keep talking and asking them those questions.
Okay, check this out.
You know, next month is, go ahead, Robert, let you talk.
No, I was going to say to Brenda, what Pamela Ann was saying is exactly right, that sometimes the kids are not going to ask the question, or they're not going to, they're going to act out. They're going to, all of a sudden, like I said, a kid that was vivacious and lively all of a sudden goes quiet, or somebody who was nice and sweet all of a sudden becomes the bully.
Right.
And that's where teachers, I think, there's additional training. I think that discussion can also extend to our educators to become more better listeners and more aware of what's going on with the kids and to intervene. We can't wait for the kid to come in with a black eye. Sometimes things are happening. In this country, there's somebody sexually assaulted about every 98 seconds in this country, and a large percentage of those are children. And so kids, they don't know what to say. They don't know what questions to ask. So we have to, as adults, we have to be more aware and cognizant of what's going on. And like Pamela Ann said, notice their behavior.
Right. I dealt with one kid who would go to school. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
One of the young kids that I dealt with.
I was just going to say next month is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Is that correct, Pamela?
It is.
Okay, so here's what we would like for you to do right quick. Just give us some ideas on how we can get involved, how the rest of the community can get involved with
countering or addressing domestic violence? What can we do next month? What can we start doing tonight? What can we start doing now to address the issue of domestic violence?
Some of the things that we can do, definitely having these conversations, keep having these conversations outside of the radio. Have these conversations with your kids, with your coworkers. Talk about this subject. Get involved. See if you can get a domestic violence program started in your church, because we need it there as well. If you know that someone is being abused, don't use pressure tactics. Help them. Talk to them about a safety plan. Support your local DVAC. Anson County has some amazing people working in their DV unit there. Kim Lau, Gilda. Those people are awesome. Support, Leon, support the vigil, which they have every October. Support organizations that are fighting for DV, because most of these organizations that are doing the footwork to fight DV, they're not getting funding from anywhere. This is out of our pockets. Every time I go somewhere to speak, this is out of my pocket. I don't get paid to do this, y'all. This is all volunteer. So we're doing this footwork. Support those organizations. Find somewhere. Support your shelters, Turning Point in Monroe, the shelter in Charlotte. Support those places. Have those talks. Stop contributing to normalization of domestic violence, the music that we're listening to. I heard a song where Tank said he would put his hands around her throat until she asked him to stop. That's domestic violence. We can't just be like, oh, I love that song. We got to stop normalizing it, because it's not normal to be in these situations. Let people know that there is help available. The domestic violence hotline number, 1-800-799-SAFE. If they don't want to talk to you, give them that number to call. I think Anson County has a 24-hour line that they can call. But just most importantly, be there and love those people that you know are dealing with those with domestic violence.
Did you say 1-800-799-SAFE?
Yes, that's the domestic violence
hotline. All
right,
ladies and gentlemen, 1-800-799-SAFE is the domestic hotline. You can hear somebody,
you good.
Hear something going on
girl.
Next door. There she is.
Oh,
hear something going on next
I
door. Hear something banging up against the wall next door. Don't assume they're having fun. Call 1-800-799-SAFE.
And
hey, can
you,
I?
Let me throw this out there. If you work with someone that you know is in an abusive relationship, I've seen this save so many people's lives. Get you a calendar and start documenting the days that they're out. If you saw a black eye, things that they wouldn't tell you, but you saw yourself, document those things so that if it ever happens that they want to come out and they end up going to court, they will actually have some kind of documentation to show. That would be a great thing for people in the workplace to deal with. I'm going to be at a DV work in the workplace workshop tomorrow, so I'm looking forward to that.
Hey, Leon,
I was going to say actually Brenda too. Can you hear me, Leon? Can y'all hear me?
Yeah, hear me.
Okay. I noticed when Brenda asked a question about what to do, and I noticed you did answer Pam, which is great. But I was also, you know, I was an administrator. I worked with early childhood education for quite a while. And one of the things that we require teachers to do is to kind of like, you know, do a kind of like a morning check. Not, you know, you're not going to just check them out like a car and check the tires and everything. But when children come in the morning, because sometimes a child, if you check them in the morning, you know they didn't get it at school. So if you see something, like if there's a certain time that people can establish where early in the morning, they kind of like just do a look around at what children are looking like when they're coming in from home.
I like that.
And then document anything they see, whether it's a whip or whether it's a mark or a strange looking mark or whatever, just continue documenting. So if you do have to eventually deal with social services, you have dates, you have scars, you have things that you can say on such and such a day, this person had this, the next couple of days they had that and they had this.
Right.
This is not adding up. This is not looking right. I'm seeing a pattern. So
that's good advice.
You know, those things like that.
Ladies and gentlemen, got about 1 minute. Go ahead, bro.
Leon, Pamela, and I would like to invite you to come on my radio show on Radio 1 in Washington, D.C. If you can call in. You don't have to drive to Washington, D.C., but on Domestic Violence Month next month.
Yeah,
I'd like to invite you as a guest on the show, and we give you a segment to really just articulate some of these same points you made today. And we have a national audience, and we're on Radio 1. And we'd love to have you as a guest. We'd love to have
this
information spread out across the country.
Family Ann.
Absolutely. Let's do it. Yeah.
Family Ann, that's a serious upgrade. you just got what they call a serious upgrade. Okay. Tell you something, we're going to have to get up out of here. But first, let me tell you this first, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to do a little round table right quick. Tell you this right quick. We have a special guest coming to the Hollis Center tomorrow. We have First Lady Roy Cooper's wife, the governor's wife, coming down to the Hollis Center because she's been hearing about the great things going on in Anson County through the Hollis Center.
Wow.
So, Robert, can you give us a clap, man? Can you give us a little clap on that? Because here's what you have to do. I'm just telling this. I'm just saying this right quick. Here's what we have to do. We just have to keep our light shining like Pamela's doing, like Ms. Huff's doing, like the brothers are doing around the room, like Ms. Richardson's doing. We have to keep our light shining because good shines. And when people see good happening, if people just see bad happening, they're going to think that's it.
You got to make it never.
Thank you. If people just see bad happening, they're going to think that's it. That's why it's important
that
we expose our kids to excitement. We expose them to greatness. We expose them to goodness. So we just got to keep it going, ladies and gentlemen. We got to keep fighting. Keep fighting, Kamala. I just like to encourage you to keep the good fight going.
Leon, I want to say something, too, before we close out, too. We talk about the women who are receiving domestic violence, but we also need to talk about these men who are committing this violence and their needs as far as whether it be behavior management, whether it be mental health, whatever it might be. But we're going to have that discussion as well.
Amen.
Absolutely. We got a lot to talk about, guys. This has been a great thing. Like, thank everybody for coming out and listening to Straight Talk on Domestic Violence with Pamela Ann and the Gateway Brothers. We'll be back
next
week to talk about some more good
stuff.
Thank
you guys for having me.
Stay tuned. Thank you, Pamela. Thank you, Sabrina. Thank you, Brenda. Thank you, Curtis. Thank you, Joseph. Thank you, Robert. God bless you.
Thank you, Joseph.
Did you say Munyon?
Joseph gone.
No, I'm here.
Munyon's still over there, man. He ain't gone. Yeah, Joseph.
Hey, Joseph. How you doing, man?
I'm Curtis.
Can I hang up now?
Yeah, you can hang up. We just do this. We just hanging out. These girls are just hanging out. Now,
we're done
hanging out. If you like, hey, these girls are just hanging out.
Thank you.
God
great
bless
job.
You. Thank you.
What's more is there? Rob,
man, who that?
Yo,
magic card.
Right,
now listen.
Rob,
let's put it all together, folks. We can do better.
Rob,
put it all together.
Rob.
Yo.
Turn it down a little bit, man. I need to say something. I can't hear.
Is
that
off the
blue magic bloodstone or who? The stylistic?
That
I
is the stylistic.
Yeah, I know it, man, because
hey,
that's what's so funny about it. You got bloodstone, you got blue magic, you got the stylistic. I mean, all of them are sounding just alike.
I'll be there with the same guy. They just change suits every now and then.
You know what they all sound like?
Why that?
So I was singing in falsetto.
Yeah, they were doing
it. I know it, man. But them jokers, but the music and everything, though, was like the style.
Man,
we
could have done falsetto.
Man.
Hey, is it too late for us to do falsetto?
The same people, though.
They weren't the same.
So Smokey made a million off that falsetto stuff.
That jugger probably can't sing a lick. That falsetto make you cough, though. If you don't do it right.
Everybody can't do it, man.
We're not on the album.
Yeah, you are.
Not really.
This is
I'm going to do a round table right quick. Yeah, somebody can follow you, but everybody's gone. Check this out.
Okay.
I'm going to do a round table right quick. How many of y'all I got money on it. They're going to withdraw Kavanaugh's registration. What do they call it? Nomination. They're going to withdraw it, man.
He's out of there.
He can't do this.
He's out of there, bro. I hate to say it. I'm glad to say it.
This last girl got him, bro.
You cannot. They will hold this against the Republican Party for the rest of their lives. having a serial rape, I don't know if he raped anybody, but sex abuser on the court, you will always be able to point to that.
You hear about the third allegation, though, right? You hear about the third accuser, though.
Third.
Man, she.
And he's trying. There's probably some more. You know, once that start, boy, they keep coming. They just keep a coming.
Oh, they coming, man.
Your kids are keeping. Don't start it. Don't get it started. Yeah, that's your goal.
Absolutely. All right, brother. I'm out of here, man.
Okay, y'all out.
Don't go, man. Go ahead and talk, man. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut y'all.
Yeah. But I kind of missed that conversation. Kind of got in a little late. But I want to throw something out here. I want to give a kind of prediction through what I'm seeing. I've said this, kind of like mentioned this a little bit before, but we are establishing a precedent that I think is going to come back to haunt us. Because what's going to happen, see what is happening, I think we've moved the pendulum from one extreme to the other. Whenever you're living in an extreme area, it really comes back really to hurt the poor and black folk ultimately. Like, for example, these guys like Kavanaugh, Trump, and these other guys who really have a lot of money and power, they might get these allegations, they might stop them from a nomination or whatever, but at the end of the day, they're going to have their money. This stuff, if we just cannot get some type of balance to say, okay, we're not saying we're not going to heal women anymore, we're not going to go to this point where we're going to try to act like we're going to ignore women, and women should, I would hope, not to the point where they think they have to wait 30 years. But I think we need to make sure that we have some process, due process, in place, because we're going to open up the floodgates anytime a black man or anytime a black person get ready to go into a position, there's going to be an allegation coming out there. And especially
Robin and Curtis, want to say something? Shut up. Robin and I were talking the other day about how important it is that, you know, even if they reach back 30 years, say for instance you reach back 30 years, and this guy said, I was just a little drunk boy. So what about all the little drunk boys out there that are presently drunk boys out there doing stuff? So do they think it's okay to do it? Does that kind of give them a green light?
Yeah, well, he's saying he didn't do it even when he was young. I mean, I'm just saying, but that's he said.
I know what you're saying.
My point is, if we do not try to quickly establish some type of due process, we have a situation now where we are basically saying now, bleed the woman. And I'm saying in a lot of cases that might work out. But you do want to try to establish a process, because a lot of these women have young sons. And what I'm saying is, if we do not, there's going to be some evil people coming up with somebody to come out against folk to make an allegation.
Well, I agree with that point, that whenever there's a any law, regardless, it could be something as innocuous as a speeding ticket, it always disproportionately affects black people and the poor.
Right.
And so people with money and power can get around them. And people that don't, they get caught in the net. And that much is true.
Because imagine a black guy with already being a black guy. And someone comes out. Now, he's not going to have the money that Kavanaugh and Trump and all these people are going to have. But if we establish the precedent that you got to bleed a woman, I'm just saying, have a process that will not hurt the woman, that will not suppress the woman, that will not abuse the woman, that will not neglect the woman. But at the same time, if you just put it like that, we could be back to where, well, y'all the one said the woman is right. There's a white woman or some type of woman coming out here now with some allegation. She said he did it. Y'all said, you know,
that's pretty much a different way of saying what I was.
Hello.
I mean, they start charging you more money. Good night.
Good night, brother.
Is it up? What lead on it? Robert. Joe.